You're listening to Public Safety First, a podcast to help you learn about the First Responder Network Authority and how you can be part of the future of public safety technology. And now, your host.
Welcome to the Public Safety First podcast. I'm Thomas Randall. I serve as a senior public safety advisor for the First Responder Network Authority for Region 6 states, including Texas. Today, I'm here in Kingsville, Texas, and I'm joined by Sheriff Richard Kirkpatrick of the Cleburne County Sheriff's Office. Sheriff, thanks for joining us today on the podcast.
Absolutely. Well, I'm excited to be here.
That's outstanding. Well, if you don't mind, introduce yourself to the folks here and tell us a little bit about Cleburne County and the Cleburne County Sheriff's Office.
My name is Richard Kirkpatrick. I am the elected sheriff here in Cleburne County, and this is my second term being in office here in Cleburne County. Over the course of time, it has been, I guess you could call it a transition in terms of communications, in terms of moving things forward from where they were several years back. We've actually come to realize that there's so much out there that it makes our jobs so much easier. And over the time that we've been able to really integrate with FirstNet and AT&T, that we've actually come so far to make our jobs so much simpler that when I was a young patrol officer back in the day, we just didn't have the technology that we do today and things that are so simple that we take for granted now that just didn't exist back then. And so it has always been my mission to equip our officers with the best tools that they could have and enabling them to be able to communicate. And sometimes in an emergency, you may be left with that very, 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 very rude awakening when you can't talk to anybody. And when you're in a critical situation, that's where things matter. Really, people's lives are on the line when those critical communications need to happen.
I know Cleburne County is a rural agency. I came from Central Texas in a rural agency, and you guys are more South Texas. Talk about where Cleburne County is, population, the terrain, and the square miles that you guys cover.
Geographically, Cleburne County is a very unique place in terms of how the county is laid out. We're situated about 30 minutes south of Corpus Christi on the coast, and because of the unique ranches around us, as the infamous King Ranch envelops a good portion of Cleburne County, you have a large area of the county that is mostly unpopulated, and it is owned exclusively by King Ranch. With that said, with the amount of populated areas, we don't really have too many communications issues in the populated areas, but it's the unpopulated areas that sometimes that we struggle with, and those areas are the problems where we typically have occurrences ranging from everything that you can possibly imagine with disaster. Because of the size of the sheriff's department, we sometimes are a victim of not being able to be everywhere at the same time. And so, you know, we heavily rely on these things to be able to go out and conduct operations in these areas.
One of the things we spoke about, your agency's use of FirstNet, and you guys are using a lot of different solutions and taking technology to a whole nother realm here in Cleburne County. There's really a couple of things that really caught my attention and things I wanted to focus on with you today and have you share with our audience. And one of those is how you guys were relying on push to talk and that solution, and especially how you utilize it in the jail. And so if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about your experience with FirstNet and the use of push to talk.
Originally, when we had traditional push-to-talk LMR radio, our building structure here is heavily concrete. Because of that, in the areas of the jail, we always struggled, even with 800 megahertz. When a lot of police agencies transferred from the traditional VHF, that gave us a long distance, you know, but it didn't really solve a lot of building penetration issues. And then as we transitioned over to an 800 megahertz trunk system, even though there was better building penetration, when it goes down to when you've got a very heavily concrete area and metal around the jail, that's where communication struggled again. And so we found ourselves in a unique opportunity when we started talking about the push to talk. You know, it was really a thing of simplicity, and we were able to get the building penetration. We were able to talk on the radio. It was kind of a no-brainer. It became much more simplified to be able to talk on a secure network
But we found ourselves in a unique situation where we really needed both.
And when you looked at how Push to Talk was going to help you in the jail, and then looking at the interoperability between LMR and LTE over FirstNet, how did you go about that with your interop kit?
Initially, it was more of a thing where, well, are you going to replace one with the other? When we really started diving into this and realizing that you need both. If you have an officer that's holding a phone, for example, in his hand, and he's talking on a Push to Talk, then we want to enable him with a radio. By the time you start getting all of these devices, you're like, I got to wear a radio, I got to hold a phone, I got to have this, I got to have that, I've got to have all these tools on my tool belt. We really needed one simple platform that did all of that. And that was why we did what we did, because it was able to group all this stuff under one device and do everything. We just wanted to free the officer up from having to have everything on his tool belt to then be able to fuse everything into one platform.
So you found it important to augment your LMR radio system.
It
and FirstNet was that path.
And just because it was so much easier, I'll give you a case in point. So, you know, a jailer is talking back and forth on a push to talk in the jail. And then all of a sudden he needs to make a transport to the courthouse, for example. Well, then he's going to grab up those people, put them in a van and take them to court. Well, now we have a need to be able to talk to a dispatcher. She's got to log that in. So now he's got to put that radio away, grab another radio and tell him, hey, I'm going to the courthouse with five inmates. And then it's this back and forth thing again. So just out of simplicity, that's why we wanted something that we could go and literally switch to another frequency or a channel within the phone. And say, hey, dispatcher, I'm en route to the courthouse with eight inmates and same vice versa coming back to the jail. And then not having to carry multiple platforms on a belt to communicate on one simple device that does everything.
So you were talking to me about the devices that you all started with and some of the issues that you had with channel selection and volume and channel being on the screen, and you move to a different device that has a channel selector on the top.
Correct.
Talk to me about that.
We first started with a very ruggedized device. It did exactly what we wanted it to do, but the unfortunate part about it was, and we found ourselves in this predicament, is that sometimes in just everyday life, if you will, the device was subject to accidental frequency change by a button manipulation. And so the jailers sometimes would end up inadvertently going to another off channel and not really realizing it. And then they're calling on the radio for help and they didn't realize that they're talking on another channel, if you will. And then the others aren't listening. They can't hear it. They're like, wait a minute. You know, the display on the device will be a little small, and really understanding the needs of law enforcement or your public safety, if you will, is kind of the one of the reasons why when they went to this newer device that had the ability to have a positive selector switch that not only controlled the volume, but the other one that manually had to be manipulated on the top of the device that you know exactly what channel it is. There's no way to bump it or inadvertently allow the unit to get on another channel accidentally, you know. So I think in the terms of simplicity, that was a real win-win for us and why we did what we did there. And so it just works out so much better.
And the fact that it mimics the operation of your LMR radio.
Really, yes. And again, because the way we've set it up in it with the radio over internet gateway, it's literally mirroring the same secondary channel on our 800 megahertz radios. If you switch it over, you literally think that you're on a, what do we call our secondary channel two. It's literally on channel two of that radio. So it mirrors it almost identical. And frankly, you wouldn't really know one way or the other whether you're on it operating on a 800 megahertz radio or a push to talk. Really no too much difference did.
And that's a great point and a good segue into how you then brought the cubic vocality bridge to bring FirstNet push to talk into your LMR network. Talk to us a little bit about what channels you brought in, how you set up the channel plan, and what your bridge device was able to ingest as far as LMR and LTE.
Well, the interesting thing about the bridge device was the fact that it doesn't really matter what you throw at it in terms of being VHF, UHF, the simplicity of the whole ability to jump from one radio to the next was a real eye-opener. We had a donor radio to join with the cubic vocality bridge. was really, again, even in itself was cost effective. When you compare that to the cost of what it takes to do a cubic vocality device, it's, I mean, a third of that cost. It just made sense because the capability was still there. And it was so much easier for us to do that and be able to have the best of both worlds.
Exactly. And you started off with a couple of channels that you could bridge, but it is working well for you. And you're looking to expand on that, aren't you?
Absolutely. We will ultimately bring on another VHF channel on it here. The Sheriff's Department runs all of the emergency services. And so hopefully some of these other agencies will want to do the same thing. Sometimes you have third-party companies that manage our ambulatory services. And so a lot of times we don't necessarily give them a full-blown access to our primary radio system. But if they had a push-to-talk telephone, which most of them do, it makes it so much simpler because we can bring them on. It comes down to simplicity and how we join that stuff and make these interoperability connections that now makes everybody else's life easier, because sometimes these companies are not within Claiborne County and they're also operating in other counties. When you talk about LMR systems and you go from Nueces County or Claiborne County or Hidalgo or any of these other places in Texas, sometimes they're operating their own networks. And they're not going to allow us to go and talk on their network because it's privately owned. And if we want to go talk on it, we have to pay about $300 per radio. But there are occasions when we have emergency operations or operational things that are happening that we need to be able to do that. But simply enough, it's not cost effective. There's no way for me to, you know, get in my patrol car and drive an hour from here and go into another county and then be able to talk in their system, because it's just not going to happen. And it's not because the Sheriff's Department is saying no. It's because you have a private entity that is managing that, but the way they've got it set up now prevents it from happening. And so we've taken some of these phones down to these other jurisdictions and we supply them with a phone, a push to talk phone. And automatically now they're talking to us on our radio. We've solved a major problem in a matter of seconds. I mean, I can be anywhere in the state. I can be in New York if I wanted to and still be able to talk on my 800 megahertz system through that bridge. And so I think in terms of all of that, I mean, how can you beat it? You know, it's just made life so much simpler.
You're really looking at solutions that FirstNet is providing to help out with interoperability with your response partners within Claiborne County, but also with your mutual aid partners that come in.
Corpus Christi, for example, they operate an 800 megahertz system just the same as we do. But in effort to join those systems together, well, you're talking about a big deal, because now we have to literally join the systems by fiber line. Well, that's big bucks to do that. You know, I mean, it's a hard line connection between the two systems in an effort to allow them to talk on the radio. So it's not like we can set up a microwave dish and point it to Corpus Christi and get it to work, because it will not work like that. And so just making these interoperability connections have been so important for us. We are able to do those things so much easier now than we've ever done before.
So unlike some of our other conversations with other sheriffs, You've taken this solution on push-to-talk and FirstNet interoperability one step further than what I've heard before. Oh, yeah. And that was with your schools.
Oh, yeah. When there is a mass shooting, it is pandemonium on all levels. We train for this continuously with active shooter responses. And then when I was looking at it from the grand scheme of things, we've left out the one thing that we don't talk about, and that is the communications piece. Here in our district, we do have a lot of security guards. We put a smartphone in their hand with the ability to do push to talk. And then in an event of emergency, they can slide over. And now we're all talking. They're providing on-site information as it's happening right now. And we're not having to deal with a delay. Sometimes when in the emergency responder business, minutes are like hours. You can't possibly get there fast enough. And so wouldn't you want to know if that person was able to feed you on-site information before you got there, then we're all in a better position to then respond to that threat when there's seconds, when lives matter, and when all that stuff matters. And so, again, it comes down to timing. It comes down to knowing what you don't know and being to have that one little critical piece of information at a second's notice.
One thing that I wanted to ask also is we talked earlier about some of the fixed cameras that you use for FirstNet. Tell us a little bit about those. And then also, Is there a plan at some point to maybe access the camera systems within the school to be able to see those either in your command vehicles or even in your patrol deputies' MDT?
First and foremost, we have a, I guess you could call it a security camera at our boat ramp that is kind of being run by a Cradle Point router that's connected to FirstNet. Claiborne County has Baffin Bay is utilized both recreationally by commercial fishermen, sports fishermen. The ugly truth of it is there's thefts that happen there, or burglaries of vehicles, you know, people's very expensive boats. So we do deal with that on some level. But more importantly, we're dealing with, it's a Border Patrol issue, or maybe it's a drug smuggling issue that we're dealing with, and being able to identify different watercraft that are going out there at various hours of the night that maybe shouldn't be out there really boils down to what can we see at that very moment. On a different note, do we use cameras in the schools? In one particular school in our county, yes. We do see the cameras at our school, and we are able to have a connection to that through the smartphone that we can pull up and literally look around.
Outstanding. Claiborne County is a coastal county?
It is, yes.
It's a hurricane county?
Oh, gosh. We get slammed with all of that.
It's a wildfire county, and you're a near border county. Yeah. You're not immediately on the border, but you're considered a border county, mainly because of the highway routes that travel through Claiborne County.
It's our proximity to Gulf of Mexico, and that is one of the reasons why we are deemed a border county.
We get it all, and sometimes it's really trying to figure out how do we address certain issues that come up and prioritize those issues. But I think in the grand scheme of things, this has helped us with our manpower issue, because again, eyes and ears in other places are almost as good as the person being there themselves.
That puts you on a path to where you looked at the compact rapid deployable. What was some of the thought process on how you chose to purchase the compact rapid deployable, and what type of use cases are you looking at?
So when we had our very unfortunate murders that happened down in on the beach near Corpus Christi a couple of years ago,
we found ourselves in a communications breakdown, because when we were doing the investigation, you know, we were spending hours and hours and hours on the beach there just south of Corpus Christi. Proximity from Corpus Christi to Padre Island National Seashore is literally no more than a few miles. But because there is no houses out there, there are no towers. Because there are no towers, there is no communication. And so when you go down there, no phones work, no radios work, none of that works out there. And so we found ourselves again in a unique situation where the CRDs, the compact rapid deployable, was that piece that we needed something to be able to connect to get cellular coverage and be able to establish our own networks. It was perfect for what it was, because if you look around the industry, the overall cost to buy a cell site trailer, you're talking massive bucks there. Now we get to the CRD, and why was that so easy? Because probably under 10 minutes, the thing can be literally deployed, up and running. It worked well. It does what it's supposed to. And honestly, it's simple. It's easy. Literally one button you press and you flip the switches on and it does its thing.
Before we wrap things up, anything else that you wanted to add to our conversation today?
You know, we look forward to seeing where things progress, because it's always one of those things that you don't know you need something till, you know, that the infamous thing happens that you say Murphy's Law. Even though we've been through disasters, we've been through emergencies, we know how that plays out. Someone comes along and they say, hey, you know, we can do this now that we never did before. And I always look at that optimistically, and I always look forward to seeing what else can we do to make those jobs easier, make, you know, giving those first responders the ability to do things that they've never done before in the field. Like I said, I think that probably as time will go forward, that more of tablets in the evolution of smart devices will become smarter, and the availability of data that's being able to be pushed back and forth. Because let's face it, you know, data itself is a tremendous thing. And how do we get that from point A to point B in the middle of nowhere, and being able to do that in a manner that is timely? You know, we don't want to wait for it 10 minutes. We want it now. And that's really where I think progressively in the future, where things lay out.
Well, thank you, Sheriff, for for really taking the time to share your experience with us.
For sure.
And speak to us today about your use of FirstNet, some of the solutions that you're looking at.
Yeah.
It's really been great to have you on the podcast, and I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Thanks for listening today. We're excited to have you join our podcast community. Make sure to subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, and YouTube. You can learn more about the First Responder Network Authority at firstnet.gov and learn about FirstNet products and services at firstnet.com.